This is The Fourth Estate on RCR Reality Check Radio.
Good morning. You're listening to Reality Check Radio on Friday, the 13th of December, 2024. I'm your host, Marty Gibson, and this is The Fourth Estate, a show where we discuss the media with people who know what it's like inside the beast. This week, we'll be looking at the latest financial woes impacting the legacy media. We'll take a hopefully magnanimous look at the impact us usurpers in waiting at RCR are having in filling some of these voids. We'll take a look at the fading efforts to gatekeep discussion of important issues such as central bank digital currencies, gene technology, sex education, and also debanking. And joining me on this quest is New Zealand's first female train driver, a woman equally comfortable hunting with rifle or falcon, the kind with feathers. She was once a columnist for the New Zealand Herald and won the Opinion Writer of the Year back in 2016, when her opinions were quite different. And you can see how different on her Riding Shotgun Substack. Rachel Stewart.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And also joining us, one of the most familiar faces on New Zealand television from the late 70s until his pre-push jump out of mainstream media in 2018 when his managers expressed concern over his excessive thinking problem. Luckily, his wrong think has found a happy home at RCR. Welcome, Peter Williams.
Well, thank you, Marty. Kind words. Yes, I think you're going to have to stop using that phrase about one of New Zealand's best-known faces very soon, because I think I've just passed my sixth anniversary of not being part of TVNZ, so the gap from my leaving is getting longer and longer by the day, and, you know, I think I'm getting happier by the day as well.
Well, this is our last show before Christmas, so I can give some thought to your new introduction over that period, Peter. I'll come up with something fresh for next year.
Thank you.
Well, first up today, we always seem to have new cracks in the legacy media to peer down into. In the past week, we've seen a spin-off begging for money with all the desperate wheedling one might find in a meth head trying to get a hit. We're seeing stuff consciously uncouple, splitting into two legal entities. We have the ongoing slow train wreck, if that doesn't trigger you, Rachel. I know you probably don't like thinking about those. At redundancies at TVNZ, although with the lawsuits, they are framed as asking staff what might be done to avoid more legal trouble. Peter, as a man who lived through the salad days of Television New Zealand, do you often find yourself reading about their latest woes and hear yourself mutter, "See, I wouldn't want to be you"?
Well, you know, it's always been like this. I mean, I hear dreadful stories about the cutback of staff at TVNZ. You know, I worked at TVNZ for the best part of 40 years, and there were always people being moved on. There was, what's the old saying, the only constant thing in the world is change. And
right.
It wasn't just the corporate restructures that TVNZ went through. There were various other, you know, intra-departmental changes that went on during the time that I was there, and there were many, many of them. There were many rounds of redundancies. It seems, though, as if we're getting very close to a tipping point, because the place is bleeding money, and I'm sorry, I just do not believe the chief executive, Jodie O'Donnell, when she says that she will be able to turn the company around in 3 years. They say that they're going to have a digital future. That means that they're going to be basing their future success on TVNZ Plus. If that's their future, then they're going to have to, for a start, get a subscription service up and running very quickly. Why they haven't done it already is beyond me. Because if they expect to be a profitable company through their streaming service, which doesn't seem to be able to insert advertising into it in a very clean and non-annoying way, then I just don't think that they're going to have much of a future. Certainly the free-to-air arm of the business is terminal. I mean, the biggest advertiser on free-to-air television on TV One is TVNZ Plus, and we know that there's no money changing hands for that. So I believe the company, sad as it is to say, I was there in the salad days, I don't mind admitting that, but it just does not have a future, I'm sorry. And its newsroom is not helping the overall business cause by its constant anti-government rhetoric and its very obvious left-wing bias. So I'm sad to say that it's not going to be a bright future for TVNZ because I just do not think they have any chance of turning around the financial losses that they're incurring to the tune of about 30 million bucks a year at the moment. And the future, I'm afraid, is all doom and gloom.
Rachel, I alluded to your changing viewpoints in the introduction. The left-wing bias of TVNZ would have once suited you just fine, and now you've got rather a more freedom, less government way of seeing the world. Are you finding a home anywhere for that, or do you have any thoughts on what they might do to dodge the iceberg?
Oh, don't. It's funny, when you think you're on the right side, in this case it was the left side, and you don't think for a minute, you think it's all fair and it's all perfect and it's wonderful and TVNZ was fine, although, I've been going off the news particularly for a long time. But back in the day, yeah, it was just normal, but Key's government was in, and I thought that TVNZ was on the right track because, I'm right. It's, I was right at the time. Those are my political beliefs. So I'm very mindful now that those are not my political beliefs. And so you come at it from a different lens. I'm now more red-pilled, I guess is the word. And life has sort of taken over, and you start to see exactly what you used to believe is. I mean, I'm so embarrassed about the columns I wrote now that I don't even like people to even know that I did. Admittedly, it's 8 years ago, so I'm with Peter in terms of you probably having to change your intro, because 8 years ago I won that award. 6 years ago I left the Herald. I can't abide anything going on there. I can't abide anything in stuff. I see that Duncan Grieve and the spin-off is also now begging for money, which is pretty unpleasant to watch. Have you ever asked Duncan Grieve to be on Reality Check Radio, Marty?
I haven't personally, but I'll make a note and make sure that he is asked
Yeah,
if
well,
we
he does
haven't.
know the industry. He does know the industry, but I'd love to see if he'd accept your offer. And Peter talking about TV One, well, when you're putting out things on free to air like Trans and Pregnant and watching a two men in a bathtub or one pretending to be a man having a baby with a beard and pot belly, but not from beer, but actually, so in other words, it was a woman. I don't see where they're going to go, really. Hey, Peter, you just can't, I just can't abide it. And I don't know. And they don't even seem to understand that most viewers just are completely disgusted by it.
Yeah, and of course they've made a big play back into sport in recent times, and they're fighting a losing battle there. The problem is that apart from the cricket, which they're going to lose very soon because the contract is up, and surely when you are in a financial position like TVNZ is, you won't be able to come up with the millions of dollars a year in rights that you're required to, that New Zealand cricket will want for their ongoing survival as well. So TVNZ has got the cricket for now, which is, good proper sport, but they seem to be inventing a whole lot of what I would call crap sport as well, and showing that in prime time. And the latest example of that is a thing. Is it coming up? It's Friday night tonight. What's it called? Chasing the Fox. It's some kind of celebrity golf event. They're putting on at 7 o'clock or 7:30 in prime time. I mean, it's mind-boggling the kind of what I would call crap that they put into prime time, and they think that people will suck it up and that advertisers will pay money around this. The other thing is that rugby versus cricket T20 cricket match. I mean, it's garbage sport. It's bastardizing a bastardized form of cricket anyway. And I'm just appalled that TVNZ has lowered its boom so low that this is the kind of sport they believe that we should have. Because it's been stated, and I think this is quite true, the only real future for free-to-air television, for live television, is sports events. And the worldwide experience, particularly in the United States, which is, I guess you still say it's the home of commercial television, The only real future in commercial television, corporate free-to-air TV, old style stuff that we remember from a decade or so ago, and beyond that, of course, the only real future is in live sport. Live sport costs money in rights, it costs money in production. And I don't know whether or not TVNZ have got the cojones to be able to make the big investment into that, bearing in mind that Sky is a very well-established competitor and has its mitts on pretty much everything. If you're a sports fan, you don't really care about TVNZ. Sure, you watch the cricket, but if you're a real sports fan, you just get Sky. And yeah, it's essentially developed into a monopoly situation. TVNZ have missed the bus there. They had their opportunity in times gone by. They blew it. And that's just another nail in the coffin, which will inevitably come.
Yeah, I mean, even Sky is in a pretty desperate state, isn't it?
Well, it
So,
is, but you know, it's the New Zealand economy, and Sky's next big negotiation, well, it's actually going on at the moment, is with New Zealand Rugby. That was a pretty sweetheart deal that New Zealand Rugby got back in. When was it, 2020, when Spark Sport was in the mix? Spark Sport's no longer in the mix, so Sky will get their rugby deal for a damn sight less money than what they got 5 years ago, and that's not going to have a great impact on New Zealand Rugby. We
A frequent.
digress, Marty. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right. We've got room to digress. That's a great aspect of the forum. I frequently mention the illusion that so many consumers of media labor under, which is the idea that they're the customer rather than the advertisers. And at RCR, our listeners are our customers, and we've consistently covered issues the mainstream media won't touch as a result, legitimizing public debate in a number of areas, transgender issues, vaccine harm, the COVID phase one inquiry, and the RBNZ consultation on digital cash. Are we almost through the first they ignore you, then they laugh at you phase? Are we in the then they fight you phase that comes before the then you win bit, do you think? Where are we in that continuum? And what impact
Well,
have we had, do you think?
oh,
And
you've definitely had an impact, and I think, you know, when they're writing articles like we're going to talk about a little bit later, I think to do with the digital cash, and they're saying that, you know, RCR and Voices for Freedom, and you know, because you're obviously tied together in some in their minds because it suits them. When you're named like that, you know they're kind of fighting. They're not ignoring, they're fighting. And I do think that next year is going to be interesting for RCR, and like I've said before, it's the only radio station I'll go on. Maybe I'm silly about that, but I don't feel comfortable anywhere else because at least we're talking about the issues that are happening that no one else is talking about really. And I feel that that's something in the dying days of I don't know what media particularly, but maybe the planet we all need to be doing. And so yeah, I really believe RCR has made a huge dent, and that's certainly why I'm here. I'm very, very proud to be on RCR, actually.
It's an international trend as well. I was very lucky a few days ago to be invited to have lunch, courtesy of the Free Speech Union, with Peter Boghossian. And it was an intimate
What?
little lunch table. He's a American philosophy professor and free speech advocate who has been touring New Zealand with the Free Speech Union. And he is a man who has had his problem, shall we say, being cancelled because he is a great advocate of what many in the academic world would call wrong think. So he was fascinating to have lunch
He
with.
would
It
have
was
been a
actually,
good lunch companion. I
oh,
listened
I
to his
tell
interview
you, I
on
tell
Simon O'Connor's show.
you, yeah, that's right. Well, he mentioned that. I think he'd just come from Simon's interview that very morning in Queenstown. And it was one of the best lunches I've had. It lasted 2.5 hours. It was just one of those times where the conversation just flowed, and it was just exhilarating stuff. And anyway, Boghossian is apparently in line to get a job inside the Trump administration in the education department, not to be the Secretary of Education, but an undersecretary responsible for tertiary education. He has to
Wow.
go through the whole Senate hearing process as well. And anyway, that's a story that we should follow in the future. But I guess the point I was trying to get to before I got distracted in my own mind was that we talked about the legacy media, and he said to me, "Do you listen to it much anymore?" I said, "Oh, I listen to a bit of News Talk ZB every now and then, which is our main talk radio station. But apart from that, I'm not listening to mainstream media, not watching mainstream media at all." And he said, "Yeah, I'm the same. I just can't stand it anymore." And the worldwide trend and the influence of, shall we say, the renegade media and a different formatted media is obvious with the influence that Joe Rogan has had. Now, I'm a late convert to Rogan, and I don't listen to all that many of his podcasts because, well, actually, when they're 3 hours long, it takes a fair bit of effort to get through them, and my road trips aren't that long. But Rogan's influence in the media is just not untypical. And, you know, he did the big interviews with Trump and with J.D. Vance. But there are other people, other podcasts that I'm listening to more and more as well, people like Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly. I seem to have had quite a fill of American politics this year for obvious reasons. But it's just another indication, I think, that the media world, the old corporate mainstream legacy media world is done. And the media of the future is all about being split into quite small silos. And RCR is obviously part of that. The platform's part of that. You could say that Newsroom and the spin-off are part of that as well, except they look at the world from a different perspective, don't they? Whether or not they're going to be ultimately financially successful, I don't know. Newsroom, I think, is another one that gets a lot of its money from subscribers, but also gets a lot of government money. Whether or not that's going to clear up or dry up, I don't know. But the spin-off has obviously hit the wall in terms of its government money, so therefore the begging bowl goes out. Maybe that in itself is a lesson for independent media wanting to start. Approach the world from a more balanced perspective, and you might have a better commercial, you might get a better commercial appreciation. Just saying.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's been outsized amounts of money that Duncan Grieve and the spin-off have got, and I think he was certainly looked after by the previous government to a degree that was quite unbelievable, really. So seeing him with the begging bowl and wanting people to, you know, support them, it couldn't happen to a nice bunch of people if they go to the wall. I find the spin-off to be quite an evil little empire. They target people individually. They've targeted me, they've targeted Annie O'Brien, they've targeted lots of people, and they just go to they go to any lengths to get you. So not a nice organisation. And the other thing too is I noticed that Gavin Ellis, previous editor of New Zealand Herald some years ago, but still kind of living in that paradigm, I think he's gone, and we've got to watch it, Peter, you and I, that we don't sort of age ourselves to a point where we kind of go, oh, we don't understand it anymore. Because he certainly does not. And he's got a blog called The Nightly News, and he's talking there about the Sunday Star Times presentation that he approved of last weekend or something along those lines. And he says, here's a classic line, the mainstream media today is awash with bad news. That is a primary cause of news avoidance, with many citing anxiety as the reason they've turned off the news. It has also affected levels of trust. Well, okay, but I don't think he's got it quite, that the affected levels of trust are nothing to do with bad news. So, you know, this is the sort of stuff that's being pumped out telling us that we are wrong, that we've switched off. No, we've switched off because we get misinformation, disinformation, and we're just not getting what we need.
And also, we can go to X or we can go to RCR. And it's just palpably different, isn't it? And it's open, and you can the differences are becoming clearer and clearer. And I guess the frustration for me is, although we've got a great audience, and you know, we've punched well above our weight, particularly when you consider that Radio New Zealand are going to get a $24 million funding increase this year because they were obedient to Willie Jackson. And that's order of magnitude greater than the total running costs of RCR the entire time we've been going. So, it's another case of survive till 2025, and we're launching RCR 2.0, and that'll be interesting to see how that goes. So we were always thinking.
Yeah, and the other thing about that Radio New Zealand funding is, bizarrely, Marty, most of it seems to have been spent on salary increases. Not surprisingly, the number of people making $100,000 a year or more has pretty much doubled. The chief executive's salary is up to Paul Thompson. It's an extraordinary, like, best part of $600,000 a year to run a couple of radio stations and a website.
And a number of producers.
I know that's. I guess we shouldn't be shocked about public service chief executive pay rates anymore, but I'm thinking that's quite a lot of money. And you're right. Yeah, the staff resources they have, the number of producers for Morning Report, is it 15 or 18 or something like that?
It's amazing. Often there are producers who've got, you know, several shows here. They do really well, and always kick myself for not thanking them more, but they do a great job at RCR. We've got another government-funded pearl-clutching organization, the Disinformation Project. As you said earlier, they... Sanjana Hatotua of the Disinformation Project was rolled out to frame the public engagement via VFF and RCR that you mentioned earlier as a conspiracy theory, saying digital ID will actually give you more privacy. How did such weak reporting from Newsroom make it past the subbing stage? Why was the reporter not ordered to go out and get comments from someone critical of what RBNZ is doing, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand is doing, or offer what I would have thought would have been a pretty routine right of reply to VFF?
Yeah, well, that's right. But the best thing about that article, I think it was written by a guy called, is it Andrew Bevan, was the business journalist at Newsroom. He's quoted on Sanjay, who I thought had disappeared into the ether and had no credibility anymore. Not that he ever had any in the first place. But right at the end of the article in the public comments section, up comes the name of Eric Crampton, of course, economist at the New Zealand Initiative. And Eric Crampton says, I'm just trying to summarise it here, the line is, digital currency seems like a solution in search of a problem. When you put solutions out there without problems, then we have problems.
Right.
Yeah, well, actually, his comment goes, there is no obvious problem for which a central bank digital currency is the best solution. RBNZ seems keen on a CBDC. Nevertheless, solutions in search of problems invite speculation about intentions. So, yes.
That's right, yeah.
Very, very good comment. And what are the intentions? And all the way through, of course, the article, the RBNZ spokesman saying, oh, well, you know, it's, we just want the best for people and we're not trying to take away cash. And,
it's just a coincidence that 95% of reserve banks around the world are doing exactly the same thing in lockstep.
Yeah, and we're just listening to you and you know, but, well, we had to wade through all these QAnon theories and the Canada trucking, you know, where they took the money away from the truckers that were donated and froze their bank accounts.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not, we're not Canada and all. You know, and you just think, conspiracy theories, really?
Well, there are enough people for whom that's sufficient explanation, and there are enough people like that to elect governments, Rachel. So I guess that's the problem, as I often say. It's not that there are psychos who want to rule the world. They've always been those guys. They've just got better tools now, and they've used them.
But I love the way they've sort of said, oh, Voices for Freedom campaign saw record. Last time I looked, organisations of any stripe are allowed to get together and make well-organised submissions. I mean, it happens with the Free Speech Union. They help their speak up for women on trans issues. Why is VFF somehow different if they want to help submissions going against the digital cash change? So, yeah, it just made me feel like we were back in the COVID era, really. It's exactly the same thing. And mentioning Sanjana, I mean, it just instantly, I just think of trad wives and feel like braiding my very short hair.
Twisting it into pigtails.
You're trying.
But there are more and more of these advocacy groups on both sides of the argument. And, we've got the Treaty Principles Bill submissions period open at the moment. So Hobson's Pledge has its tool for people to make submissions. You've got the ACT Party with its online tool to make its submissions. But then there are voices on the other side of the discussion as well who are operating tools. And I bought, for my sins, I bought that book by Roy Matta-Smale, the Treaty, the Waitangi Tribunal lawyer, a little $25, 30-page publication, which came out a couple of weeks ago, which is nothing more than propaganda, i.e., the Maori chiefs did not cede sovereignty back in 1840, and so it goes from there. And that she has an online tool available for people to make submissions as well. So there are, as Rachel has just stated, there are advocates on both sides of a great many arguments that are getting their supporters to put submissions in an easy way, I suppose. I signed one the other day, and I don't know who it was from, whether it was the Free Speech Union or Hobson's Pledge, or maybe the Taxpayers Union, to Mahi Drysdale at Tauranga City Council, with their appointment of iwi representatives to council committees, unelected people coming onto council committees to make decisions and to get votes and to get paid. And this is one of my great bugbears in life, is that I'm afraid governance at both national and local authority level is about democracy. It's about electing people to sit around the governing table. And I do not want people to be appointed to governing positions. And we've already got it at Environment Canterbury. We've got it now, it seems, on too many local authorities around the country giving people voting rights. I heard Maurice Williamson recently telling us about the Auckland Council. It was the full council, all 20 of them, two of whom are appointed through the Independent Māori Statutory Board. It wasn't sitting as the governing body, it was sitting as a committee deciding, and it was not being chaired by the mayor, Wayne Brown, who wasn't there on the day, but they were deciding they were going to make a submission on the Treaty Principles Bill as well. And as Morris said, it is no job. It is no, it is just not the duty of a city council to make submissions on a piece of central government legislation. A local authority is there to collect the rubbish and keep the roads in good condition primarily, and to plan for the future. So it was well out of their lane. Morris, of course, voted vehemently against it, but sadly, it passed on the chairman's casting vote. So that was that. Auckland City are now going to make a submission opposing the Treaty Principles Bill. What right do they have? None whatsoever. But as a former Auckland ratepayer, I'm pretty anti that. If I was a current Auckland ratepayer, I'd be very grumpy about it.
Well, I guess so. This is another one from the gatekeeping section. The government-funded Science Media Centre has announced that the Gene Technology Bill is being introduced, and this is before any press releases issued by the minister or government. They sent journalists a canned, one-sided expert commentary, and we can only conclude that in order for this to happen, the Ministry for Business, Innovation and Employment must have been working closely with the Science Media Centre to arrange it. And with the possible intent that this kind of public relations might discourage under-resourced and often functionally innumerate and not particularly scientifically well-versed journalists from going out in the field to do old-fashioned reporting. There's always the old, where's your bioscience doctorate trope when people question the experts. But I mean, my personal view is it's not necessarily wrong to have genetic engineering. But what we typically say at RCR is that we need both sides of the story, and we want, I guess, some assurances that there are some precautionary principles in place. What do you think's driving this? Rachel, do you want to, have you, what do
Yeah,
you
well, I
think about?
think, science is up for debate now, isn't it? I mean, science we all saw during COVID was believing, whatever the government said, really, wasn't it? I mean, they were the only source of truth. So, Science is one of those things at the moment that seems to be on the decline in terms of, I mean, if you can believe that a man can give birth, then you don't understand science, do you? So I guess, well, biology at least. So I guess it's just controlling the narrative. It's more of the same. It's not unexpected. I have no real skin in the game on genetic engineering. I don't know enough about it, probably. And like you, I'm open to whatever's going on there, but I want to know both sides so I can make up my mind. And I'm not going to get it because the Science Media Centre is going to control that, and the government. It just seems all very odd all round. And I guess you basically, you know, you basically capture your journalists if you train them in science reporting. I mean, and there aren't many actually full-on science reporters out there. There's Jamie Morton maybe in the New Zealand Herald. But other than him, I can't really think of too many. And so we're losing the narrative again. It's more censorship, really, isn't it?
Well, the other thing is that having been around journalists for quite a long time during my life, very few of them have a science degree or any post or any tertiary education in science. In fact, I think of all the journalists that I have worked with over the years, only one of them had a science degree. She had
Was
a
that
PhD.
me?
I'm sorry, Marty.
Look at you.
I'm talking about my mainstream career, I guess. A fellow resident of Tauranga, in Lisa Glass, who these days runs emergency management in the Bay of Plenty area, and has jumped career very successfully. She's got a science degree, and she was the only scientist, I suppose, that I ever remember working alongside during my time. Most people have, history, political science. Sometimes they wasted their education to become journalists after getting a law degree. I could never quite figure that out. But any bit, but what I guess what I'm saying is that very few journalists, with their main interest being in written expression, I suppose, they just don't have, what is it, the left brain or the right brain or whatever. They don't have that part of it that works. They don't have the figures, and they don't have the periodic table in there.
It's the numeracy that's a big problem for them often. I used to do a roaring trade, converting numbers to percentages for my co-workers when I worked in a newsroom, and I used to write down how to do it. And they would say, "Oh, it's no good. Just can you do it for me?" And I always thought that's a problem.
It's a very specialized field, science communication, actually. And there's very few people who do it. Like you say, Peter, Lisa Glass was really one that we can remember. I don't know about Jamie Morton. I don't know what his background is. He seems pretty good, but I don't know. He certainly believes in climate change anyway. Whether that's right or not is another issue.
It strikes me, Rachel, that he just issues or regurgitates government press releases, doesn't he?
Pretty much. But you know, they build them up into something amazing. So yeah, it is. So obviously, there just aren't enough journalists who have background in science or physics or engineering or biology or something. But yeah, this is where we're heading now.
And the
Yeah,
guy
too
who
much.
runs that, what's it called? The Media Science Centre, Science Media Centre, is Peter Griffin, isn't it? And he.
I
And
didn't know that actually, but that concerns me.
yeah, well, he did for a while. I don't know whether he's still in charge of it. So a lot of the stuff that he puts out is very Green Party orientated as well.
Oh
So
yes, and
he's
he believes that humans can change sex. So again, I can't really. How can we follow these people really? Because you can't, unfortunately. I know, back to that, but it's a good harbinger of knowing whether it's a good lead into knowing whether somebody believes in reality or not.
Well, another reason this is problematic is that IMBE, who this is also the agency that will be responsible for the gene tech bill if it's passed, are major funders to the tune of 3.725 million of the Science Media Centre. So it's a bit of
Well,
a conflict of interest.
it's propaganda, isn't it? I mean, let's call it for what it is. It's a government department looking to sell us on a particular line of scientific adventure, scientific journey, a scientific journey, and we're going to have a little 3 point, whatever it was, 3.2 million propaganda arm just to make sure that everybody toes a line and agrees with what we're doing.
Well, there's a
Yeah, might as well.
$3.725 million expenditure, but it's addressing a $30 billion problem, and that is our exposure under the Paris Accord agreements. We owe $30 billion so far, and there is that hope that bioengineering is going to get us out of that hole. And that's, I think, behind a lot of the unseemly urgency in it.
Yeah, I heard the other day that we were buttoning back on that, that we're not going to buy those carbon credits anymore, and that we're just going to plant a whole lot more trees to save ourselves $30 billion.
National Party MPs always say that behind their hands.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, I wouldn't trust that
A change of
they're not
government
going to
and
sell us down the
we're
river.
a change of government and we'll be all back on track and
As Christopher Luxon said, we're absolutely fixated on carbon zero by 2050. If you think about what being fixated on something means, there's a level of irrationality there, isn't it? It's an odd thing to admit.
Well, the whole thing is just bizarre, and I know you've got plans to talk about it, but what the BNZ is doing by not lending money to petrol stations anymore, I mean, it's just nonsensical. And what did I hear somebody say this morning? The number of electric cars in New Zealand is 2.6% of the entire fleet.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're going to be running out of our use for petrol stations by 2030, as Mr. BNZ Chief Executive says.
Yeah, that's been bizarre. I might as well talk about that now. I mean, there are some Joe Rogan, and I was on my to-do list to identify the guy, but he did a really good interview with a man about debanking. And it is a way that the US government essentially outsources censorship to private companies. That they don't have to go through any hoops just to shut someone down. And I mean, they were debanking cryptocurrency organizations, anyone involved in things, cannabis, sex industry, they just debank them. And it's interesting to see that coming to New Zealand. And it's interesting to see the reporting on it, which doesn't contain the sort of outrage that I'd hope for. Have you, I mean, we're all eligible for debanking in that US system.
Well, by the sounds of things, we could be eligible for debanking in the New Zealand system as
Well,
well. I
yeah.
mean, I'll never go near the BNZ again, not that I've ever been a BNZ customer. But if there was ever any chance of me having a BNZ account, it's completely gone now. But the most famous case that I remember of debanking, I think it was just earlier this year, wasn't it? Was Nigel Farage before
Yeah.
the US election, back during the British winter. So I guess we're talking February, March. He is quite a wealthy man. He's made himself a few million over the years in the financial markets. So he was being banked by Coutts Banks, which puts itself about as being a bank for the rich and famous. They decided they didn't want Nigel Farage anymore. And I think as a consequence of Farage having his accounts closed, and not just his accounts, but I think his brother's and maybe his wife's as well, didn't the British government in the dying days of the Tory government, didn't it pass a law saying you cannot stop a person from opening a bank account? Did they go that far? There was certainly some political
There was.
pushback against the action of Coutts saying you're just not allowed to stop a man having a bank account.
There was a fair bit of denial. I think that they were saying, "Oh, again, they were twisting the hair in pigtails, Rachel, trying to make out that it was some clerical error." But
That guy on Joe Rogan was Mark Andreessen.
Thank you. Yes,
And
there's
he,
a
that was a
3-hour interview again, so you need a bit of a
brilliant,
road trip.
absolutely brilliant interview. I watched pretty much all of it. I just got to finish it off, but he certainly raises all the issues that we all need to worry about in terms of banks and banking and digital currency. And he's an American businessman and a former software engineer. and he knows his stuff. And that was, I thought that was a great interview. But yeah, I mean, Gloria Vale. I mean, how do I know that's why would I think shutting down the accounts? Why would we think shutting down the accounts of a cult, if you want to call it that? I mean, then does that mean that we should be shutting down the accounts of people who believe it, people can change sex then because they're a cult? So where does this go? This whole thing is absolutely crazy.
Well, I think
And
they'll be shutting down the accounts of people who don't believe you can just change sex rather than the ones who do, Rachel. So
I agree. That's
that's you,
a
buddy.
worry too. The next thing they'll be calling us a cult, the turf cult. So it just where does it lead? So yeah, it's a very concerning thing. I see the they backtracked on the sex toy story. I don't know what bank that was. What bank was that?
Was BNZ again.
BNZ again.
Yeah, they're
Do they
really.
still even exist? I mean, I didn't think BNZ even still existed, to be honest. I thought it had gone. That's how much I know. But all banks are a concern. I mean, for a while, the ASB was a concern with a few things they were doing. There's nowhere to go, really. We're kind of stuck with the banks we've got. We need banks. They need us more than we need them. And some, well, no, actually, we need them. People are caught. It's a very tricky situation. And I really worry about the power of the banks.
Well, talking of banks, wasn't the most bizarre story of the week Nicola Willis saying we need more competition in the banking industry? My response to that is, really, do we? We've got four banks competing hell for leather to get New Zealand business. We've got Kiwi Bank, and we've got, I think, nine other retail banks in the market as well. And people have got plenty of opportunities for competition if they really want to go looking for it. 85% of us are obviously very happy with the service we get from the big fours and the big four, and we're not going anywhere else. But Nicola Willis says, oh, we'll put $500 million into Kiwi Bank, and that will increase competition. But there was just no pushback, no critique, no criticism, no asking of what the hell she was on about. And I just thought it was weird. I mean, and then she threatens to regulate the banks for what? For making money. Well, hello, that's what businesses do. And I'm sorry, but the big four banks do not make excess profits. And that in itself is a highly subjective term. A profit's a profit, and there is no official marker for excess profits, as far as I know. And as the ANZ chief executive will say, we're only making 12% return on our equity investment anyway. So it's not as if they're just big companies. That's why their bottom line is quite big as well.
It's where you come back to the innumeracy of reporters. It's difficult proportions. It's very big, far away, small, far away. And I mean, my thought with that was the lady doth protest too much. I mean, if you really want, I mean, the competition that's that the banks are staring down, really worried about, and lobbying hard against is crypto. They really don't want that competition because, I mean, something like Bitcoin, because there's a limited amount of it, it's a currency that goes up in value rather than down. So that's the competition. So yeah, her hue and cry about, well, we need to fund Kiwi Bank, I think is probably almost on behalf of the banks to make it seem that that's the competition.
Well, have you never heard of the TSB? Never heard of SBS? Never heard of what is it, the Cooperative Bank? Never heard of Heartland Bank? I mean, there is competition out there, Marty. If you're pissed off with Westpac, go and get an account at TSB. It's very easy to do. They even operate in Tauranga, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, this brings us to our last topic, which is the normalizing of the creepy interest that bureaucrats have in the sexuality of other people's children. The RSE curriculum at the end of term one next year will be fulfilling, apparently, an election promise from the coalition, but misinformation is being blamed for driving this decision. And I can't help but wonder whether this is another area where National's making some bewildering decisions that possibly come from ministers that maybe we'd be more at home in labour. The key event is the change in curriculum, yet the Education Review Office and you know the Labour side of the argument are framing it as a misinformation campaign and saying that parents won't be part of the new curriculum. Radio New Zealand have been the chief proponent of the Eero line with little mention of what was actually in the curriculum or what parents might want, which as I suggest, I guess what I said suggested, what I want is for bureaucrats to stay out of my kid's sexuality. It's not something they need to worry about.
You're pretty hot on this, Rachel. You go off the long run.
Yeah, I could make a big splash here. This is the fulfillment of Winston's promise, or you know, New Zealand First promise. So it's good, but boy, they've been up against it with you know Chris Bishop and you know the Erica
Ducey's
Stanford's
the worst one, isn't he?
Ducey, I was going to say,
yep,
that guy.
Ducey, that guy's got to go. That guy. He's got outsized role in government in terms of, I mean, he was in Tavistock, so come on, I mean, he's part
gender
of the whole trans.
Gender affirming care, where it's like sort of saying to the schizophrenic next door, yes, the lady in the house next to you is reading your mind through a satellite dish.
That's it. He's a trans maniac. So, you know, National is no different to me than Labour. I'm not seeing a huge difference. I'm not impressed with them in the slightest. So anyway, it's going to go. I didn't see much media coverage of that except for RNZ trying to muddy the waters by saying that parents are coming to want to come to fisticuffs, you know, over it. And of course they do. They don't want their children being taught that they can change sex. They don't want it. They don't want their children told that how to you know, give oral sex at 7 years old. People say, oh, that's not happening, they say to me. Seen it. I've read the booklets. I know what's going on. And if you only have to look past your nose to see that this is in our schools, it's in our primary schools, and kids are coming home saying, oh, Mum, I can be a girl, or Mum, I can be a boy. This has gone on far too long. It is child abuse, in my opinion. And I can't wait for it to be over, but I suspect there'll be renegade teachers out there who won't listen and will carry on. And I do wonder what's behind people who have drunk this particular Kool-Aid in the education system, and I despise them for it. I have had a bit of a sad week myself this week. I have a niece who is a midwife. I've talked about this on Twitter, who mentioned to me the other day, and she's not only a midwife, she's a midwifery lecturer for Otago Polytechnic, who mentioned to me the other day that she played that trans and pregnant thing from TV1 to her students. And I said, well, why would you do that? And she said, because they support it and it's great. And I said, well, they have to support it or they don't have a bloody job. It's evil. Why would you do that? And she walked out and, you know, walked out in a huff, which is what wokies are prone to do when you kind of call them out. But it's my niece. I do love her. But she has been completely captured by the cabal. So educationalists are no different. She's an educationalist and a midwife. I mean, this is the industry that helps women give birth. To show that video and to tell people that you can I just said it's child abuse and that went down very badly. So I'm kind of feeling a bit head up about the whole subject this week. I'm sure it'll calm down again. But this is a great step forward, and I'm thankful to Winston for making it happen. And we just got to make sure that it does come out of the system.
Yeah, well, there's an old saying in journalism, isn't there, Marty, called burying the lead. And the lead, the most important part of this story is that the curriculum, the current syllabus, will finish at the end of term one next year. Yet in that Radio New Zealand story, that particular fact was mentioned in the last paragraph of a story that looked like it was around about 1,000 words. It was just extraordinary that the pushback against the fact that RSE, the curriculum syllabus, is being changed, and what's more, the new one is not going to allow parents to have any say in what's going to be taught to their kids, which I thought was the whole point of the education reforms that David Longy brought in 35 years ago. This is going to be bureaucrats, again, running this RSE. And more to the point, is Inside Out going to continue to get its $1 million funding from the government to go around intermediate schools and primary schools and put their particular brand of propaganda around. I mean, that's where I first heard about that organization was from our friend Rodney Hyde, whose daughters at Arrowtown Primary School had been subjected to, I think it was a 3-hour morning visit by these people from Inside Out. I'm thinking it's just unbelievable what went on. Rodney's girls, as you can imagine, they led the pushback against it, and good for them.
They should have got them in a got them in a chokehold. Yeah, no, as a parent, you know, it constantly plays on my mind that those, as I said, the creepy interests into the sexuality of other people's children. You know, I've often, when my 13-year-old daughter's been telling me about whose brother's trans and who's, you know, and what they're learning at school, I often say, you know, how much do you know about my sexual preferences? Nothing. You
Good.
know, how would you feel if I made that the basis of my identity? That would be weird. And how would you feel if I felt moved to tell other people's children about it? That would be disgusting. So, right, just keep that in mind
And
and think about that with
as a
every.
lesbian, and as a lesbian, Marty, not you, me.
Well, I am
But
too.
you, yeah, whatever. It's talking about your sexuality is so, it's so yuck. I mean, but I obviously I'm a different generation, but this is not my world. This is not, I'm an onion. I've got layers, and that's way down there who I sleep with, if I'm lucky. But it's just like, it's not even there. It's, I cannot abide it. As if I went to a school and talked to them about my sexuality. I mean, oh, I'll just go and talk to kids about me being a lesbian. This is, they bring trans people in to talk to them. I mean, what, and that's not even a sexuality, that's just a delusion. So it's a very strange world we're in, and I really pine for the days when people just were, we were just, you know, it might, we might not have been, well, the backlash is coming. We weren't as accepted in the 70s and 80s, surely. But you know, people were honest with you, and they said, "Oh, well, I don't like that," and you carry on. You know, this is indoctrinating children. It's ruining generations of children, and children don't need to need to know about sexuality until that kind of thing, anyway, until much later. I mean, these booklets, and I don't want to get explicit, but they talk about how to give how children can give blowjobs to pe to another child. I mean, that is an actual fact. I didn't believe it when I saw it, but I've seen it and I know it exists. Why would you teach a 7-year-old something like that?
Yep, it's mind-boggling, and that is the curriculum that's being taken out, and that should have been the lead in all the coverage of it this week, but it wasn't. And I think you guys are absolutely correct. The National Party just don't want to go near this. Winston has, well, he's had another win. He's had a few during his time, and he's had a couple this week, hasn't he, with the Greyhounds, which was a bizarre decision, but that's maybe for another day. And then this decision about RSE as well. But people like Erica Stanford's release at 8 o'clock, whatever morning it was, Wednesday morning was, sorry, Tuesday morning. She very reluctantly has had this curriculum pulled. Matt Ducey was nowhere to be seen. But then it's just like the so-called press conference that was at Ducey and Luxon gave a few weeks ago about the New Zealand government response to the CAS report. So basically, we're going to get another panel of experts, most of whom I'm sure will be PATHA, PATHA members or inspired. They're going to offer another report. In the meantime, we have to be very careful before we clinically prescribe these puberty blockers. I mean, why can't we have a government with some courage? Just to
Well,
say,
Britain's just
these are
Britain.
bad for teenagers. Stop
Yeah.
it.
Britain banned it yesterday. Britain
Yeah.
banned it yesterday. So, you know, how long before we wake up? And they're going to try and make as much money as they can in the meantime. And, you know, it's a global agenda, and New Zealand's going to play its part, which is what we are so want to do these days.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of globalist people at the helm, and they want to be good boys and good girls and
Oh,
do
yes.
what is generally accepted in those globalist circles as being the right thing to do.
You're a conspiracy theorist, Marty. Gosh. I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you.
I'm a keen observer of patterns. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our time together this morning. It's been really great to have you guys on the last show of the year. I've really enjoyed all the shows we've done together and all the shows done with our other guests as well. And I thank you very much for coming in today. Have you got anything that you'd like to say in
Yeah.
closing before the year closes out?
I'd like to say that 2024 has been a hell year for the media. It's been a hell year for the people that consume media too, I think. I don't know where it's all heading. I really wonder if we're ever going to talk about media in glowing terms ever again, and at least mainstream, obviously. And I despair for 2025 if this is the trend. But we carry on because we have to keep some levity and laughter around it, but it's getting pretty hard to laugh about some of the things we're seeing. So I hope you've had a great year, Marty. You've done a good job on the show, and I look forward to seeing you next year.
Thanks very much, Rachel. As Winston Churchill said, when you're going through hell, keep going.
Yeah.
Peter?
Very good. I think as I look forward to the summer holidays, the only mainstream media that I will be consuming is some live test cricket out of Australia, and maybe some early season PGA Tour golf from Hawaii and California. And I think my other media consumption will probably continue to be podcasts, because the mainstream media in New Zealand, which is pretty pathetic during the year, essentially goes on holidays and brings in a whole lot of part-timers and not particularly skillful people to operate their shows over the summer break. So I think I'll go to where the pros are and listen to some podcasts, some RCR replays, and a bit more Tucker and a bit more Joe and a bit more Megan and any other good right wingers that I can lap up as I'm puddling around in the garden.
More Tucker, eh? New Zealand's Peter Williams, America's Peter Williams. Marvelous.
I think he's great. I really do.
So do I.
Well, thanks again, and have a great Christmas. Have a safe Christmas and New Year, and we'll look forward to talking again next year. I'll probably talk to you before then. Anyway, Rachel, especially, I'll give you a call, and I wouldn't mind coming down south and having a Pinot Noir with you at some
Oh
point.
yes. Yes, we can certainly jack that up, buddy. That'd be good.
Okay.
All righty. Bye now.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Fourth Estate, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.